are talking, we're in the beginning of an Advent season. I am in the book of Isaiah. So the first thing is, if we can pull up the map of Israel. Oh, look at that, there it is. So at the very top, you'll see that there is Asher and Naphtali and Zebulun. And above Asher in Naphtali, even though this map doesn't have it, is where half of the tribe of Dan would settle. And then across from Zebulun, going towards the Mediterranean, that was the rest of what would have been called Dan. So those are some of the tribes of Israel. This is where they would land. And then you would have Manasseh and Ephraim and Gad. But then the lower part is what would be called the tribes of Judah. So that would be Judah, Reuben, Simeon. I don't see where Benjamin. Oh, there's Benjamin up there. Anyway, so what we have is we are in the 8th century. It's about 750. There is a prophet whose name is Isaiah, the way I would pronounce it. But I have been chastised by one of my professors at a seminary who said, Bill, there is two A's in that. It's Isaiah. I'm like, good, Isaiah. I'll just pronounce it my way. You can pronounce it however you want. I didn't do well in that class. Anyway, so it is the window in which Isaiah would be living. And he was born about 760 BC, and he would die about 715. He would have four kings that he would be the prophet to. Now, for those of you that don't have Israel in your head and how it would function, it would have prophets, it would have priests, and it would have kings. If you can hold on to those three things, you have the entire Old Testament. It's those three things. So the prophet would get a call from God to say something to the people of Israel. And so Isaiah, in Isaiah 6, you read of his call. And God would call him and say, I need you to say this. Jeremiah would have that call. And Jeremiah would have been young. And he says, I'm young. God said, I didn't ask how old you were. I just need you to do this. And some of them, Ezekiel, how many of you have tried to read the book of Ezekiel? How successful were you? And it's strange. Isaiah, he walked around nude for 3 years. His wife said, yeah, don't come home. But some really strange things happened. Anyway, here's Isaiah, and the people of Israel and Judah have split. And so there's a king in the northern kingdom and a king in the southern kingdom. And Isaiah would be primarily in the south. But there at the beginning of the book of Isaiah, he is starting to prophesy about Israel. That would have been the northern kingdom. And he hammers them. Absolutely hammers them. And he says, you have wandered from the God of your youth. And there's all these metaphors. And Jews love metaphors. If you haven't picked that up, there's a metaphor for everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're the vine. You read about that in Isaiah 5. The vine, so grapes, Israel would be the fruitful vine coming out of Egypt. That's what they would have been known for. Anyway, here is Isaiah who says, Assyria is coming. Because you've been wicked. And they didn't believe him. And so he named one of his kids. Imagine hearing your kid's name, and it was, Seize the Booty, Speedy is the Prey.
That was my next option.
Really? So imagine in your Sunday school class, you know, you'd have to say, "Is Seize the Booty here?" Sounds like some kind of rap song, doesn't it? Anyway, there is this stuff that Isaiah kept coming out, and it was judgment upon judgment. Assyria would be to the right of where the Armenians are. That would be where Nineveh is, and that would be today where Mosul is. That would be parts of Iran, parts of Iraq, parts of Syria. That's what would have been known as the Assyrian Empire. They were coming into play at that point in the history of the world. What you may not know is that they were a cruel people. Their soldiers did not wear shoes because they were slaves. And so their feet, it looked like they were the feet of hobbits. You know, they could just go barefoot on hot sun and not have any problems. But what would happen is as they conquered people, they would strip the slain people, seize the booty. They would primarily be taking shoes and putting them on. What they did with people is, and it's kind of gruesome, they would wipe out a community, and then they would take people that they thought would be helpful in Assyria back in what would have been the one king. His name would be Tiglath. What is the last name? Anyway, I'll come to it. What would happen is
Pilazar
is his last name. And they would come and conquer people and pretty much kill everybody. But for the people they wanted to keep, they would take them and make them prisoners and deport them from basically the northern part of Israel, where you see Naphtali and Zebulun and Asher. That part of the community would be walked across that desert over to Nineveh and what today would be Mosul. Same place that they're fighting Israel today. Same area, only now almost 2,000 years later. The way they did that is that they would chain people and they would put the chain through their nose. So they puncture their nose and put the chain there and then lead them. As a way to make them abhorrent to everybody else there, both the women, the men, the women, and the children, their noses were all cut off once they got there, plus their ears, so they were deformed for their lives. And there is a relief or a stone cutting that you can see if you want to make that trip. And it shows some Israeli prisoners coming, and this would have been the person Zedekiah, who they capture, he and his sons, and they bring him before the king of Assyria, and he's standing there with a lance, and he's like, we're going to kill your children in front of you, so it'll be the last thing you ever see. And then he takes his sword and punctures his eyes. And that's the way that king would live the rest of her life. That is the story of the Assyrians. What I want to do with you is to give you a sense of the political nature of world history today. For those of you that have it, that's wonderful. For those of you that don't have it, this might be a little bit too much like a teaching, but I need for you to get a sense of this, because in America, we've just gone through an election, and I don't know about you, but I'm hoping America is a better place. Mm-hmm. But historically, nations tend not to get better. Absolutely. So I need for you to keep your optimism in check with this. And so don't get real disappointed if it doesn't play out the way you hope. But the story of Egypt. Egypt would be south of Israel, and it banks up into the Mediterranean with the Nile, which is where all their food came from. But they realized that being the breadbasket of the world, which they were, they would have two harvests every year. They needed other people. So they went on various raids and made most of their conquering people slaves. And that's who built the pyramids, were the slaves. So when you read history, you know, even though they make a big deal of Israel and having pyramids, Egyptians didn't build those. It was slaves that built those. Then we go from there, and you bump into various kingdoms that the Old Testament would speak of. And where we are with Isaiah, and we're probably about 740 when he would start to make these prophecies. Here comes the Assyrians. They rise up and they're conquering everything. If you have a sense of a map in your head, from the Euphrates, Tigris and the Euphrates, all the way over to the Mediterranean, north into Turkey, and all the way down to Egypt, that would be Assyrian conquered people. And all those people would be pulled back that they kept alive. They would deform them, so they'd be embarrassed to be out in public. And then they would just use them until they died. There wasn't any sympathy for them as people. Once the Assyrians go, the next group of people is the Babylonians. And that is tremendously tragic too. They were the ones that believed once they killed some men who they were opposing, they cut off their heads, and with catapults, they'd throw their heads over the wall so that that walled city would now see their friends' heads. And so being in this part of the world is just really awful as far as some of the history. So, you know, as a group of people, we haven't done real well with each other. We go from that period of time and we jump into the Greek window of time. And the Greeks were known for their wisdom. It's just that all of their kings would defile history. They were abusing all kinds of women, and they'd use them up and throw them over a cliff. Then you go over into Rome. I mean, this just continues to happen. You go into Rome, and Rome was known for building walls, and that's the beginning between Greek thinking and Roman thinking. That's the root of democracy. It's just that it never really worked. So they had to have kings and armies that made that work or happen together. And everybody at times can romanticize the Roman government or governments, and it would be almost 1,000 years in that part of the world. But you need to remember who they were. They did make roads, and they did have a Senate, which is part of what the United States government is modeled after. But remember, when people would say, we don't want to be with Rome anymore, they would just come in and kill and take out everything. They didn't even deport them. They would just kill them. And that's the story of Jerusalem in 71 AD with Emperor Vespasian, and then it would move into his son Titus. Titus would be the one that would wipe out Masada, if you've ever been there or ever wanted to watch that. Coming up to see if we have any cookies. Mom doesn't have any. I'm going to keep moving. So there is this stuff. Now, listen to some of the rest of this. And it's just, when I was working my way through this, I thought, man, this is really kind of depressing. The Goths would have been probably in the 4th century as Rome starts to decay. The Goths come from middle part of Europe, and they wipe through. Those would be the Germanic tribes. So Yugoslavia, Germany, Poland, that kind of stuff. They became people that just wiped everything out. But what they did, which was different, is that they killed all of the people who were teachers. And they burned all of the known books. So the main library in the world at that point would have been in Alexandria in Egypt. They burned it to the ground. They burned the main library in Ephesus, where you can still see a little bit of the front of their building, but they burned it all. They burned what was in Rome. Yeah, that's true. They burned what was in Rome. And so what happened is that from the 5th century through the 10th century, it's called the Dark Ages, because people like you and I couldn't read.
Not fast enough.
It's not that there wasn't light. There was candlelight. It's just that we couldn't read. And so it was called the Dark Ages. And when you take a look at the history of the churches, because people couldn't read, artwork became how they communicated the gospel. And the music is how people learned the story of Christ. But it was called the Dark Ages because they couldn't read. That's true. So we go from the Goths. Then we slide into what is known as the Middle Ages, and that would be Christendom. That's where a lot of my history comes out of, with Western Europe. And Christendom, there was this thing called the Holy Roman Empire. And if you've done much history, and even if you haven't, you're getting some history right now, and she doesn't like it. I can tell you that right now. But they would have this thing called the feudal system. So if Brian was the king, we would all be his vassals. And he would parcel out parts land, but we would have to give him at least half of what we made with our crops and all of our animals. And if we didn't, he would throw us off the land.
Why
and
do you laugh like that?
The feudal system and Christendom was only as good as the kings if they were moral or not, and if they were just. Now we had this experiment at the end of 1880 with this group of people over in Europe, Lenin, Marx, Stalin, and that would be called communism. Communism, as an example, comes out of the scriptures where people shared everything. And people have often said that communism is really Christian. Well, it's not. Communism is forced sharing, whether you like it or not. And it's never worked. You know, it's been tried in Russia, it's been tried in China, but what really happens is they have somebody who oversees it all, and they demand that you do certain things. And you have no opinions. So for those of you that have opinions that you share them in Russia, China, you probably are going to disappear. Then we come to this last one. We come to the American Revolution. We really were given birth of our nation as a rebellion against the king and the queen of England. That's what happened. The Puritans left England because they weren't allowed to pray together in public. Imagine that. We're not allowed to do that. So a bunch of them ran over to Holland. When Britain found out that, and this is really wild if you read the story of Quakerism, on page 43, you read about this family who's named, you know the name? Farnsworth. They actually were part of the original Quaker movement in the 1620s, is that family. And who we know as Jim and Pam, their roots go way back. Anyway, in Holland, England found out that their friends were in Holland, and they said, you either send them back or we're going to attack you. And so Holland threw the pilgrims out. And they went back to England and were sitting on the Thames River waiting for boats to take them to America. And those boats, you would know one as the Mayflower. The other one leaked. They're not sure if somebody poked the hole in it on purpose or not. So everybody who was on two boats is now on one boat. And they came to America and landed at Plymouth Rock. And after 3 years, they initiate the first Thanksgiving. But now let's think about what's happened in America since those people came. There was this sense in which they had to figure out how to form a government. And so they know that they need people who will represent people, and so they have the House of Representatives, and they know that they need people who can slow down people who are just trying to push their agenda, and so you have this thing called the Senate, which is very deliberate, and it's very slow moving in the way they think through the decisions that they make, And then there is this executive branch. And the executive branch, they were afraid would become a kingship. And so they decided that you could only be a president for 8 years. And then you had to let it go. And they weren't sure Washington would have done that. Because he was such a wonderful figure. And he said, no, for the sake of the history of America, I need to let this go. So Washington was great. And then if you read any of the biographies of Jefferson, he's kind of great. But what's happened in the history of America is we have some really wonderful presidents, and then we have some real goofs. And you've never met JP, that would be Becky's brother, who would be the paraplegic. And JP became a believer in a nursing home after he had his accident. And he would say to Beck and I, we'd be sitting there, he loved turkey. He loved this time of year. He'd say, Bill, just make me as many turkey drumsticks as you can find. He would say, you know, America is not in the book of Revelation. So something happens between where we are right now and when God calls everybody home. That's kind of a sobering thought, isn't it? I really pray, and I hope you do too, for our president and the next direction of America. But don't hold your breath. Don't believe it's going to turn out and be perfect all the way through. That's not the history of America. There's things we like, and then there are things we don't like. And that's the story of Isaiah. That's the story of Isaiah. So, he is an 8th century prophet. He is in the same window of time as Amos, as Hosea. If you haven't read a love story, any of you romantic types, you like to read love stories? Read the book of Hosea. It's just wonderful. God tells this prophet, go pick a wife who's a harlot, a prostitute. And he marries her, they have some kids. And then she decides, you know, I don't like this anymore. And she gets out. She leaves the marriage. And for almost 8 chapters, he's mad. Imagine that. Huh? And then God says, Hosea, go get your wife. He says, I don't want to go get her. She's a prostitute. And God has this way. Is it this way with you? Are you listening to me? Hosea, go get your wife. Go bring her home. And he does. And there's not a dry eye in the place. Interesting, isn't it? It's the story of Jonah with Nineveh. Nineveh is over there in Assyria. Anyway, what you have in the book of Isaiah, starting in chapter 6, moving through 9 and 11, we'll take a look at some of those. But you also, when you bump into 52 through 66, it's the most comprehensive writings on who the person of Jesus would be in the Old Testament. It's just remarkable. So we go from there. Isaiah would be during these four kings' reigns in Judah, that would be south, Uzzah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. And most people don't like prophets because prophets are told by God to get in your face. And so here's a Latin proverb. Truth causes hatred. And Hezekiah, they thought, was the promised one in Isaiah 7 and then 9. He was the promised one. Well, his son Manasseh didn't like what Isaiah had to say. And so he had Isaiah sawn in two. Don't ask to be a prophet. Nobody likes you. Anyway, we continue, and then Isaiah starts to prophesy against the northern part, that would be Israel, and against the southern part, and the Assyrians are coming. So what happened is the Assyrians would come across from basically what would be Iran and Iraq, They would go almost all the way to the Mediterranean, and then they came south, burning everything and taking everybody back. And so it would take Naphtali, and Asher has already disappeared, but Zebulun and part of Dan, even though Dan is down here, in the original part of it, Dan was out there by Zebulun, and they moved them all the way back to Assyria. That's what happened. And for those of you who have always wondered, like I have, well, there's a time in the history of the world where you would say, where did the lost tribes of Israel go? They went to Assyria. That's where they went. And so from about this point onward, we don't hear much of the tribe of Naphtali or of Zebulun or of Dan or of Asher. They're lost. And they would be lost. There would be two deportations. One is with Tiglath-Pileser, and that would have been during the reign of Ahaz. That would have been 734 and 733 BC. And then the second one was in 722 by Sargon. And these guys would all change their names when they became kings. So Sargon today, when you translate it out of Assyrian stuff, is the king is legit. Isn't that funny? The king is legit. And Tiglath-Pileser, he was a general. His name was Pulu. But it just didn't sound very scary. So he changed it to something else. But there is a sense in which people would change their names for some of this stuff. Anyway, so here we have now this story. I'm in Isaiah 7. And it talks about the war that is coming, that has taken away the northern kingdom, and that's when that would disappear. And then almost 10 years later, Sennacherib would come and try to take on Jerusalem. Anyway, what you have is in the midst of this turbulence and chaos and tragedy, you hear Isaiah say this. And then the Lord spoke again to Ahaz, saying, ask for a sign for yourself from the Lord God. Make it deep as Sheol, or as high as the heaven. And Ahaz said, I will not. I won't trust the Lord. And then he said, but now listen, O house of David. Is it too slight of a thing for you to try the patience of men, that you will try the patience of my God as well? Now listen to this phrase. Therefore the Lord himself will give you a sign. Behold, a virgin will be with child and bear a son, and she will call his name Emmanuel. Isn't that wonderful? Emmanuel. So in Hebrew, a lot of things end with E-L, and that is one of the names for God. El, if it's at the beginning or the end, it has God in that name. Anything with the word A-I-H is also the name of God, beginning or at the end. And so all of these names of people that you read in the scriptures, their names have something to do with the God of faith. But now they're being walked across this desert, and in the midst of this, they hear this promise. And the promise is God's plan. I don't know how you are. I'm 71. There are times when I really like America, and then I think, this is the craziest place to live. There's all this dumb stuff. And there are times you're like, is there any hope for anything different? Have you ever said that? Will this ever become a righteous land? And if you, like I am, sometimes you get real discouraged. And I try to be an optimist, but sometimes I find myself a pessimist. Any of you like that? Then hear this phrase. God has a plan. Say to your neighbor, neighbor?
Neighbor.
God has a plan.
God has a plan.
Whew, and you can go, okay, when's this thing going to take place? When's this going to happen? I'm ready for this to change.
Tomorrow.
But there is the sense that the plan is that he's going to send, and hear it, he's going to send the Messiah. He's going to send the anointed one, the Christ. And that Christ is going to change everything. Now, I need for you, if you're reading along with me, I need for you now to jump over to 9. And this is what the Messiah, the Christ one, is going to actually be like. It says now in verse, starting in verse 2. The people who walk in darkness will see a great light. Those who live in a dark land, the light will shine upon them. And they shall multiply the nation, and they shall increase their gladness. Now he's saying this to people who were just deported. And they're like, really? We don't feel that. We got this chain stuck in my nose. They're dragging me through the desert. And then he says, and they will be glad in thy presence, as with the gladness of the harvest, as men rejoice when they divide the spoil, for thou wilt break the yoke of their burden and the staff on their shoulders. The rod of the oppressor, as in the battle at Midian. For those of you that don't have Midian in your head, that's the story of Gideon, is what that battle is. And God didn't need anybody to beat them. God did it. God gets the glory, not any of us. But it then continues. Now I'm in verse 6. For a child will be born to us, a son will be given, and on the government will rest his shoulders. His name will be called, and this is a song that Melinda sang for us, his name will be called Wonderful Counselor. In other words, he will be a statesman. And all of the world will look to him. He will be Mighty God. So he will be powerful. He will be mighty. He'll be strong. He's a warrior. As a matter of fact, one of the words translates it as valor, which is an old word we don't even use today in our language, in English. So Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Eternal Father. Isn't that wonderful to realize? And I don't mean to cause you all to think, but how many of you, like me, think of your dad over Thanksgiving? I did. I thought of my dad. I can hear my dad say, pass the dressing and don't take it all. Pass the apple pie. What do you mean there's none left? But Eternal Father and the Prince of Peace. Now, we live in a world that doesn't know peace. We live in a world that is at odds with each other. We certainly have changed political parties in this last election, but look at the newspaper. Doesn't matter which one you pick up, there's still people hurting each other. There's still families getting divorced. There's still things that aren't right. And if you're anything like me, you say, Lord, come now. We need help. And this is what the help looks like. Then it goes on in 7. There will be no end to his increase of his government of eternal peace. So this will be everlasting. On the throne of David and over his kingdom, to establish it, uphold it with justice and righteousness. And from then on and forevermore, the zeal of the Lord of hosts will accomplish this. Isn't it wonderful to know that God has a plan in the midst of the chaos that we have lived with? In the midst of the chaos, when you read world history that you have read, and you're like, oh my goodness, it's depressing to read. We can't seem to get along. And nations can't get along. And yet, she's excited. There's this sense in which God says, I have a plan, and I'm going to send a son. And he will be everlasting, the Prince of Peace, Almighty Father. Wonderful stuff. So what we're going to do is every week, next week we'll do 2 verses of Come Thou Long Expected Jesus. We'll begin to work our way through the Christmas story. We're going to look at it from the story of Mary, or in Hebrew her name would be Miriam. And we'll see what that is. I have a list of Christmas songs. If you have some songs you want to sing, you know, if you could come up and catch me, you can circle the ones you like. We'll make sure we sing them. But we're going to sing one last song, King of Kings. So if we could have the music people, one of the songs I've been looking for a place to sing is that Hawaiian song by Ben Crosby, called Mele Kalaka Maka.
Mele Kalike Maka.
Yeah, that one. That needs to be in your play.
In his kingdom. Doesn't do the dishes in our house. Yeah. That's how that works.
Say that one more time.
That is not good.
Yeah, well, you ain't in. I'm not in your house. I'm in my house. My wife says,
"Go say that in the microphone."
You're cleaning dishes. Anyway, let me have a word of prayer. And if you got to go, I get that. But we're gonna put up some Christmas decorations. Father, we're grateful for this chance. We're grateful for the opportunity to look back through history and realize as people, we really need help. You know, not only individually, but even nations. We can't seem to figure out how to get along. Lord, we ask that you be with this new president and his cabinet. Be with America as we try to get out of a really dark time in the history of our nation. Father, thank you for these people that have gathered. Thank you that you love us. Thank you for the book of Isaiah that speaks of a child who will come, Emmanuel, God with us. In the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit and all of God's people together say,
Amen.
And women too. All right.